You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Greetings, I'm Tricia Keffer from sunny Key Largo, Florida, your host for New Books in Architecture, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. If you have any ideas for books, please send me an email at plantspeoplelove@gmail.com. And I have a very special guest for you today. The book is The Golden Ratio, The Divine Beauty of Mathematics by Gary Meisner, published by Race Point in 2018. Hi, Gary. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Tricia. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. And let's start with, can you tell the audience about yourself?
Sure. The reason that I ended up writing this book is that I've been doing a website on the golden ratio since 2001. It kind of started out just as an experiment, but it just took on a life of its own. And over the years, it grew to where it was having a million hits per year. And I've met and corresponded with thousands of people through it and learned many things. So it's been kind of a fascinating journey for me.
So what is your educational background?
Educational background is I started as a math major, so that also ties in to the topic. I made it through advanced calculus and differential equations and then shifted over to a career in finance and technology. But I've always just had the mathematics and the science and all the other areas that I cover in the book have just been passions for a long time.
So my first question I always start with is, what was your motivation for writing this particular book?
Well, the interesting part of the story is that I was very fortunate. I received a call from Race Point asking if I would do this project with them. So, you know, many authors write the book and get an agent and try to get it out there. I got the phone call with a very short deadline to do a book, and they turned out to be a wonderful partner. They did just an absolutely beautiful job in producing the book.
Yeah, since this is a listening audience, I want to just let them know that, yeah, it's beautifully laid out and designed, especially on the front cover and all of your graphics. It's they did a very nice job.
Yeah, and I would say that it's one thing that distinguishes this book from others on the topic is that it has textbook quality material in it in terms of the information you gain, but it's really was produced to be like a coffee table book. So it's 224 pages, 9.5 by 11.5, weighs 3 pounds, beautiful, 250 illustrations on, you know, beautiful paper. I mean, they just did a wonderful job with it.
So let's start with my first question. So tell the audience, what is the golden ratio and phi, and why is it important to understand and study?
Sure. First of all, the golden ratio, it's just simply a number. It has an infinite number of digits like pi does. It's most often shortened to 1.618, and it's also known by the Greek letter phi. So like pi, you know, it's very unique in mathematics and geometry. But the golden ratio is just far more interesting because it has so many surprising places that it appears and just a broad range of applications.
So this is the architecture mm-hmm. channel. Why would it be important to architecture and landscape architecture?
Well, I think the key thing is that anybody that's in any area of design, architecture and landscape architecture included, of course, whenever you do any kind of composition, you're making continual decisions on position and proportion. I mean, that becomes the foundation of, you know, what you're designing. And the golden ratio just has a unique quality that really no other ratio or number has in creating an internal inherent consistency harmony within the ratios that can be created. Does that make sense, or shall I elaborate?
Oh, keep going. Yeah.
Okay. Well, it appears in nature, and one of the most fascinating places to me is just in the human face. So if you look at the human face, you know, like if you look at the position of your mouth in relation to the eyes versus the chin, it's not midway. It's in most people at the golden ratio point. If you look at the width of your face, the inside of corner of your eyes is typically in a golden ratio of the width of your face. And so the story just goes on and on, where if you look at the face and you'll often find a dozen, sometimes even two dozen golden ratios that make a human face what it is, that, you know, give it its appearance, give it the aesthetics, the attractiveness. And so if you understand what's going on there, you can take those same concepts and apply them to any type of design or art. And that's basically what has happened over the centuries, is that, you know, way back to ancient times, the earliest recorded writing of it is by Euclid in his Elements, which was a treatise on geometry. So that was about 300 BC. But before and since then, there's just many instances where people have, you know, been aware of this and intentionally and sometimes maybe intuitively applied it to their art, architecture, designs, just to, you know, create an aesthetic that just looks naturally pleasing to the eye.
Well, that's interesting. It goes back that far. Now, one of my professors, Dr. Chang, talks about the golden ratio, and his hero is Leonardo da Vinci. Mm-hmm. What did Leonardo da Vinci do for the golden ratio?
Well, the one thing that is written and documented that he did is there was a book published in 1509 by Luca Pacioli called The Divine Proportion. Of course, it was in Italian, but Leonardo da Vinci was the illustrator for that book. So he and Pacioli were, you know, partners. They worked together, lived together for a while. Leonardo learned a lot about math and geometry from him, and I think Pacioli learned about, you know, the arts from Leonardo. But anyway, so Leonardo was the illustrator of that book. But the fascinating thing to me is if you look at the artwork that Leonardo created even before that book, you find, you know, many golden ratios in his composition. And I say this, back in 2004, I developed a software product. I did the website in 2001. 2004, I developed a software product called FiMatrix, which is an overlay that, you know, allows you to either analyze and find golden ratios or apply them. So with the benefit of that software and with the many high-resolution images that are available on the internet these days, it's been fascinating to, you know, take a deep look at some of the, you know, paintings, you know, of Leonardo, Michelangelo, Botticelli, Surratt, I mean, and just see how some of them, you know, had a, you know, awareness. And, you know, I mean, if you don't have a signed statement, it's hard to say that they intentionally applied it. But I mean, there's so many clear, precise examples that I'd be stunned if they hadn't done so. But looking at the paintings of Leonardo, The Last Supper is a good example. Salvator Mundi is another one. That's the Christ Savior of the World painting that was recently sold for about $450 million, a record. You look at those paintings and you find that same application, golden ratio after golden ratio within golden ratios, that same type of design concept that I just described in the human face. So you see those in Leonardo's paintings. And that to me was just fascinating to find.
Can you give some examples from architecture? You talked about the Egyptians, et cetera, and the placement and layout of pyramids.
Yeah.
What about some examples in architecture?
Yeah, the earliest one, and this one is subject to debate. There's no written record for it, but the Great Pyramid of Egypt, its dimensions are within 0.025% of a golden ratio-based triangle that's known as a Kepler triangle, and that's named after Johann Kepler, who discovered the true nature of the solar system orbits. But it's also within about 0.1% of a triangle that would be based on a circular construction using pi. So it could be that it's coincidence, that it uses both, or they could have used one or the other or some other method, but it's, again, just really very precisely accurate to this Kepler triangle. So that's one that is out there. You read about it and people will, you know, debate whether it's true or not, because there's no written record from the architects. One that's, again, no written record, but probably clearer in terms of circumstantial and physical evidence is the Parthenon in Athens. And the Parthenon incorporates many different mathematical relationships. So it's not that the whole thing is based on the golden ratio, but certain aspects of, like, the beam across the columns, there's patterns in there that are, you know, very precisely aligned to golden ratios. There's some things in the floor plan that I've also found golden ratios in. Another fascinating area to me was the cathedrals of Europe. Euclid's Elements became one of the best textbooks of all time. And I think through the ages, you know, people were aware of that and, again, intentionally applied the golden ratio. So there's examples in Notre Dame and Chartres, in St. Mary in Florence, of where you can see, you know, design decisions that seem to very clearly reflect the golden ratio. The Taj Mahal was another one. That one has, you know, just beautiful golden ratios in, you know, the proportions that are quite easy to see. Another more modern example is the UN Secretariat building. That one we know for sure had golden ratios in it because the architect, lead architect, Le Corbusier, he and the his associate, Oscar Niemeyer, very purposefully created, you know, a design for the UN Secretariat building that incorporated many golden ratios. So the bands that you see across the face of the building are positioned based on golden ratios. And even the fascinating thing is, even within those bands, if you look at the window framing, just even the dimensions of the windows, you can see they use the golden ratio there. So again, golden ratios within golden ratios.
And also within nature too, you're talking mm-hmm. about, you know, spirals, et cetera.
Yeah, yeah. There's a sequence called the Fibonacci sequence. It goes 0, 1, 1, 2, 3, 5, 8. And each number is just the sum of the previous two. When you take the ratio of each pair of numbers, the further you go in the sequence, it converges on the golden ratio. So we see things where it's very clear examples of the Fibonacci sequence in nature. Like if you look at seeds in the pod of a flower, or the spirals on a pine cone, or spirals of a pineapple. There's some examples where you see those integer relationships that are, you know, on their way to converging on the golden ratio. There's other examples just in the arrangements of petals and stems on a flower. I've got examples in my book how, you know, petals on a flower are like arranged to be a 360-degree circle divided by the golden ratio creates an angle of 137.5 degrees, and you see that represented very precisely in many, many flowers and the arrangements of their petals. So there's just lots of examples. More recent example, there was a new form of matter called quasicrystals that was discovered, was believed to be impossible because it's based on a fivefold symmetry. And the researcher who discovered it found that it was, you know, based on golden ratio proportions in its arrangement.
Oh, wow. So is it, well, you know what I discovered recently too? I didn't think about this. I'll interject a little personal. My alma mater is the University of West Florida in Pensacola. And now I know why they chose the Nautilus shell for our campus mascot. Yeah. And I kind of had to laugh. I was like, that's because it's divine knowledge.
Well, in that one, you talk about debate on the topic. That one is another classic example of one where there's confusion. The Nautilus is one of the, you know, perhaps most beautiful and, you know, best known examples of a spiral in nature. Most spirals in nature are what you call an equiangular or exponential spiral, meaning it just expands at a constant rate. So you can find articles out there that say, oh no, the Nautilus has nothing to do with the golden ratio because there's a specific construction of a spiral using the golden ratio expanding at 90 degrees. And it doesn't look anything like that, but I discovered after deciding I needed to, you know, dive into this myself, that if you do a spiral that expands every 180 degrees, then it very closely approximates the spiral of the Nautilus. So hopefully that's case solved on that one.
Well, there you go. Well, we always kind of had it's a little bit of a joke at our school. We're like, oh, well, Conk 'em, you know, where the spiral shells. But I think that maybe they had some more inspiration in picking that mascot than than we were poking fun at ourselves.
It's a beautiful example of mathematics and design in nature.
So now I play the flute, and I happened upon your book because I was like, huh, well, why, you know, do we have, I asked my flute teacher one time, why do we have scales? You know, how do we have these 8-note scales?
Right.
Is there any relation, the golden ratio with musical instruments?
There is, but in that, not necessarily in the way you would expect with respect to scales. I mean, scales tend to be more integer based. You know, you can take a string and then pluck it to get, you know, from the C to the G, et cetera. And those are based on integer relationships of 3 to 2 and 5 to 3, things like that. Whereas the golden ratio is an irrational number. And so most of the scale relationships, the pure ones based on harmonies, are just integer relationships. But as you, you know, put together the Western musical scale that, you know, is derived from that, there's kind of like one relationship that comes close to the golden ratio, but I would say that it's really more the integers and the equal temperament that we apply to kind of smooth out the scales in different keys that's at work there. But the other part of the golden ratio as it relates to music that is more interesting is there have been musical instruments that have been designed specifically using the golden ratio, and apparently it gives them a better sound quality and even perhaps a better playability. So the most commonly cited example is the Stradivarius violins, and you can see that kind of in the relationship of the length of the neck, the length of the body, and where some of the scroll work is. A more recent example, I was contacted some years ago about a person who sells saxophone mouthpieces in New York. He's got a company called Jody Jazz, and he purposefully set out to design a better mouthpiece for saxophone players, and everything he did about it, he incorporated the golden ratio in the design, and it turned out that the product he produced is recognized by, you know, top saxophone players as just having better sound, better playability. So there seems to be something to it, applying it in that circumstance.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor's the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Do you have some favorite golden means?
The ones that I think fascinate me the most, and probably most people, is just appearances in the human face and human body. And again, in the face, if you look in the book or examples on my website, you get this, again, just kind of golden ratio within golden ratio, where it's like every time there was a place to, you know, put the corner of an eye, put a mouth, whatever, you find that there's like a golden ratio relationship to something else. So that to me is very fascinating, that, you know, that it appears in life and nature. It also appears in our DNA. Just the offset spirals of DNA are in golden ratio proportion, the way they're positioned. So to me, it's just fascinating how life, kind of from the foundations to DNA up to, you know, us as humans, how we find the golden ratio. And an interesting story too, that's that too is something that, you know, you'll go out on the internet and read, and there's debate about it. I like to do a deep dive when I see the debate to see, well, what can I find? What can I research to prove it out? One of the things that I found for the book that's not even on my website is that I found a source that takes averaged faces. It's like composite faces. So it's not just one person's face that happens to match a golden ratio. These are averages of 50 people or more. And I found better golden ratio relationships in that composite face than I'd ever found in any one individual's face. So that to me was fascinating. Just, you know, all the appearances in nature. The book goes, you know, one chapter of the book covers a lot of, you know, the applications in nature, from the DNA just to, you know, body proportions of, you know, insects, facial feature proportions of cats, lions, primates. It's just kind of interesting how, and we all look different, but yet it's kind of like this golden ratio just kind of seems to keep appearing in different life forms. So that's been fascinating. And then, you know, the other side of it is just, okay, we have that knowledge. What do we do with it? And so that's where on the, you know, the application side, I found it fascinating to create the Phymatrix software that I did to make it easy to find and easy to apply, and to just see how, you know, users, I've sold it to thousands of users in over 70 countries, and just to see the enthusiastic response that I've gotten from them in terms of how it just makes their design decisions kind of quick, easy, and kind of almost foolproof. And on that note, it's not that you have to use a golden ratio. It's not a rule. It's not that, you know, your art or design won't look good without it. It's just that it's it gives you kind of an inherent, you know, approach, template, or archetype to use in design that I think ends up being better than just kind of going about it more blindly. I mean, there's another system called Orthogons that I cover on my website that talks about other geometric constructions that can be used to create different ratios. And the idea is that you could just use that ratio over and over in your design, but the golden ratio just has unique qualities that no other ratio does and appears in nature in a way that no other ratio does. So I think it just adds to the aesthetics and, you know, natural appeal and harmony of it.
Well, I thought it was even interesting in your book, you talked about the financial markets and, how they kind of cycle in, do they cycle in Fibonacci numbers, or are we just looking for something?
Well, you know, and again, these are areas that are hard to prove, but yet there's many people who believe it and use it. That is another application for my software, which was kind of a surprise to me, is that people that are doing technical analysis of the stock markets, you know, many of them do use this and do believe that the Fibonacci numbers and golden ratios do help to identify price and timing movements. And it's not a silver bullet. It's not like it's a magic thing, but the idea is if you're a technical analyst of the markets, you're trying to use a number of different pieces of information to make the best decisions you can to, you know, improve your success rate in profitable trades. So some, you know, use the golden ratio as just one more tool to kind of, add to their quiver, their arsenal of tools to get to profitable trades. And from what I hear, those that, you know what they're doing and can increase the percentage of good trades with that.
Does it work on lottery numbers?
No. and that's a funny thing too. And the reason I said it so emphatically is that, I've gotten that request, you know, many times over the years where people write to my website and say, well, how do I use this for lottery numbers? And if I knew, I would have done it a long time ago. But I mean, it actually, I had one guy that was just insistent that it had to apply. And I downloaded like a 10-year history of lottery numbers from California. And I put them on a scatter diagram, XY, you know, scatter diagram, so he could see it. And it just looked like snow on your TV set when there's no channel. I mean, lottery numbers are random, you know, there's however many balls and each one has an equal chance of coming out. And so there's, you know, there's no inherent pattern that's going to, you know, come from that.
So, yeah, you noticed also too, it's about like design in your book. You're talking about Bill Gates' wife, I guess, did a pie.
Michael Dell's wife. Susan Dell in the early 2000s, she's a, you know, a designer, has an artistic side. She came out with a fashion design collection called the Phi Collection. And he had a store in New York City, which I visited, you know, way back when. But that, you know, that was just another fascinating application. I mean, fashion, I have some examples of that in the book, where just, you know, where you place a hem, the neckline, et cetera, it can make a real difference in just kind of the aesthetic appeal. And so the golden ratio is another place where that can be used. There was a two sisters that came out with a, what they call it, the Da Vinci Code or something, the Beauty, I think they called it the Beauty Code, but they had a website years ago where they, you could submit your measurements, you know, your dimensions, height and waist and all that. And they would send you out an analysis based on the golden ratio that told you, you know, how you should pick clothing that would look best on you. So many applications for the golden ratio, and it's just been, you know, amazing. And one of the benefits of running this website is it's enabled me to hear from many people around the world in a variety of different disciplines. So another one that just comes to mind is the Star Trek, the USS Enterprise. Incredibly, so the guy who, Matt Jeffries, the guy who did the first design of that before a model was created, created it using the golden ratio. He was approached by Gene Roddenberry with certain criteria, and when he set it to pen, to paper, or pencil, he used the golden ratio very clearly in some of its dimensions. So just, you know, fascinating number of places where it can be applied in architecture, in design, fashion, product design, logo design, kind of really only limited by our creativity.
Yeah, I was also, my understanding that Steve Jobs used it for Mac, and mm-hmm. the trademark, the Apple, yep. You could see how he used it.
Yeah, and even the icons on the iPhone, Apple came out with a template to help, you know, designers writing apps to say, here's a template for what your icons should look like. And that template is golden ratio based.
I like in your book, you know, you always put some limitations too. That's good scientific study too. Mm-hmm. So what can you say, you know, if somebody says, you know, you can't determine a ratio after the fact, you know, are we just looking for things, or, you know, how is this really relevant?
Yeah, well, that's a common objection, you know. I mean, there's people out there that claim more about the golden ratio than is really true, and then there's another circle of people who just try to, you know, debunk everything about it and kind of throw the baby out with the bathwater. So, you know, that's one of the common objections. It's like, well, you can't determine that after the fact. And it's like, well, that's not the nature of scientific inquiry. There's all kinds of things that we determine after the fact, whether it's scientific data or forensic data or whatever. So, I mean, to me, that's a very, very weak argument. If you look at some of the Da Vinci's paintings the way I have, and you see a dozen different, you know, very clear and precise golden ratios where it was clear that he was making a composition decision, like, well, how big should this be? Where should it be positioned? And you see the golden ratio appearing again and again. It's, you know, it's kind of hard to say that you can't determine it after the fact. So I think that's not a good argument.
Not a good argument. Yeah. And even in Leonardo's portraits and stuff, we talk about like root 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 and how it relates to the canvases on the paintings and where they did their placements, et cetera. If you could have been any one of infinite number of other numbers, what would you be?
Oh, well, that's kind of a funny one too. I mean, and these arguments often come from, you know, mathematicians who, you know, tend to be much more theoretical. And so people say, well, you know, geez, a golden ratio has an infinite number of digits. Well, here it is. It looks close, but how do you know that that wasn't 1.605 instead of 1.604? And it's like, well, maybe I don't, but again, can you show me any geometric construction that comes up with the number you're suggesting? And so in the appendix to the book, I show how if you take triangles or take integer relationships, there's really very, very few, you know, geometric constructions or integer relationships you can come up with that even come close to the golden ratio. So this notion that it was some other number that was different, you know, that Leonardo was designing with a number that was 0.0001 off. It's like, well, you can't even measure that. And there's no way to create that number with any known, you know, reasonable integer or geometric, you know, constructions. So there again, I mean, people try to come up with a lot of different arguments, but if you really look to like, well, how do you get to that conclusion? You know, science is based on the best theory, and it should stand until somebody comes up with a better theory.
Well, it's true. And I was thinking about, you know, our first impression is when you're born is, you know, is the first thing you see is people and your parents. Mm-hmm. And so I guess that would be, you know, then the most beautiful thing that you come to associate with life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the human face is, you know, fundamental to just who we are, what we perceive, you know, to an extreme, unfortunately. I mean, if you look at, you know, covers of magazines, stars in movies, et cetera. I mean, they tend to be the people that are perceived by most as being attractive or beautiful. So on the one hand, you want to say, well, you know, beauty is more than skin deep and there's a lot more to a person than that. But yet, you know, walk into a room and that's the first thing you see about somebody. And there are perceptions that are just hardwired into us in what we interpret from that.
Yeah, because I've seen even online people with the golden fifers or whatever they're called, like measurements. So you can do that, and how they do that with like even like your mouth and your teeth.
Mm-hmm. And
how that does that. Okay, can you give me some more examples. What are some of their favorite golden ratios?
Let's see here. We've covered, I'm trying to think of other ones in design.
Or in math.
Well, I mean, just logo design is a good one. Google, if you think back about 5 years, Google had kind of a more script type, you know, letter that made up, you know, the big G and Google and all that. And back in 2015, they came out with a major rebranding. So they changed the logo, they changed the little icons, they changed the, you know, spacing on the website, et cetera. So that was like a big thing. And there was all this debate about, well, was this a good change or a bad change? Of course, me with my software, the first thing I did was I started looking to see, wonder if the golden ratio appeared here. And I was just, you know, fascinated to find how, you know, I got to believe they did this intentionally. If they didn't, they hit it right on the mark, you know, many times. But the logo itself, like, you know, just the ratio of the, you know, height of the lowercase letters to the uppercase letters, golden ratios within just like the slanted E on the, if you look at the Google, the E kind of tips up and there's a little point to the, that's the golden ratio, the height. If you look at the little microphone symbol that appears, you know, next to the search bar, just the width of the microphone and the stand in relation to its overall width is golden ratio. So, I mean, that was a very fascinating one to me. I did an article on that. The Star Trek, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, you too, I was thinking of Leonardo and know how that his drawing was sent out into space. I think it was one of the Voyagers, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah, you're talking about the Vitruvian Man.
The Vitruvian Man.
Yeah.
And how this ratio just seems to make life even possible.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that is fascinating. Again, you know, this is in the book, but if you look at these spirals, there's two spirals in DNA and they're offset. And if you look at them, they're not offset 50-50, you know, like if you just kind of coil them up, you know, with even spacing, they're offset so that the, you know, the one part of the spiral is at a golden ratio of the distance of the whole length of the other. So, you know, that's fascinating. And then again, just seeing how the golden ratio just appears in different life forms in their, you know, their physical manifestation in proportions, you know, that is just, you know, very, very fascinating.
Well, yeah. And, you know, I even took a long time ago, me and mom were talking about this. It was a patterns class. It's how to make patterns for clothes.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking about the golden ratio. And this is how to make your own patterns, mm-hmm. because that's the human body.
Yeah. Yeah. So it you know, has definitely been used in fashion. And you can use it for patterns within the clothing, you know, but also the, just, you know, the proportions of clothing, where's the neckline, the hemline, et cetera. One of the things that's kind of interesting about it, again, it's not a rule of composition, but it can be used in so many different ways to create so many different things. I liken it to the 88 keys of a piano keyboard. I mean, you could look at that keyboard and say, well, this is pretty darn limiting. What about all those other frequencies or ratios that, you know, appear between these notes, you know, but when you look at, you know, but what can you do with those notes, you know, those 12 notes of the scale, you know, basically 13, if you want to count the octave, but basically with a small number of notes, you can create an incredible, you know, variety of music. And that's kind of how I look at the golden ratio. It's not that you have to use it, but if you, do use it. I mean, there's really, you're only limited by your creativity. It's not like you're locked into any one particular approach to any design project. So that to me is one of the, you know, most fascinating things, is just to see how different people use it.
Yeah. My mom was You know, mom was like, when she was younger, she's like, they would have the town seamstress. And she said, I was always amazed. I could just take her picture of something that I wanted.
Yeah.
And she would just take my measurements and she would just make it for me.
Yep.
I was like, well, I think mom, she must have known the golden ratio.
maybe she did. I don't know. You know, and some people use it very intentionally. I mean, you can do it with software. There's a thing called a golden mean gauge. It's kind of like a compass, but with three legs to it. And when you spread the legs, the middle leg is at the golden ratio point of the two outer ones. So there's some very easy ways to apply it in physical design as well as digital design. And there were tools like that available during the Renaissance. So I suspect that would have been the way that Leonardo did it. But I will say, though, that I think because the ratio is familiar and appealing to us, just because we see it in a face, we see it in nature, I think, a real artist will have just an intuitive feel. So they may produce something that's, visibly indistinguishable from the golden ratio, even though they didn't have specific knowledge of it or didn't do specific application. So I've seen that too. I'll see an artist friend did something and I'll look at it and I'll analyze it real quickly and say, hey, you did that right at the golden ratio. And so he said, I didn't know that. I just did what looked right to me. So I think that happens too.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, I think that does too. I was thinking about that. Like you had a photography example in there and I was at 4-H and I did a photography project. Oh gosh, it was probably a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And it always told you, do things on the third.
Right.
And, but then again, sometimes, I didn't always necessarily do anything on third. So I've really been practicing like the third, I feel like my whole life.
Yep.
So when I saw that, but it's still a little bit off from the third though.
Well, yeah. And we should comment on that because the rule of thirds is, a very commonly known, very easy principle to apply in, cropping a photo or whatever. And when you're doing things in thirds, you're actually doing kind of a rough approximation of the golden ratio. I mean, a third is going to put one line at 0.333 and another one at 0.666. And the golden ratio, if you took golden ratio of that same dimension, the golden ratio instead of 0.666, it would be 0.618. Instead of 0.333, it would be 0.382. That's the golden ratio going the other direction. So a lot of times two people may just, they've learned that rule of thirds and it's pretty close. So it kind of can accomplish the same objective, but then if you want to get into what I talked about before, as far as the golden ratio within golden ratio, that's where the rule of thirds starts to break down because when you take the, ratios of the components, well, there's one that's 3:1, there's another one that's 2:1, there's one that's 3:2, whereas in the golden ratio, you get the same, 1.618 to 1.618 appearing over and over and over again.
Oh, so it's kind of a nice little cheat sheet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Rule of thirds is a quick way to get there, but golden ratio, I think, is really the more elegant and kind of informed approach if you really want to apply that to design.
Well, let me ask you for one final question here.
Sure.
Is there anything else that you would like the audience to know about your book?
I guess I would, just say that I write for really for the layman. So again, this is different than the, typical mathematics book. And I even on my website, I always make things simple. I like to include lots of visual examples, so that is reflected in the book. It because of the experience I've had, just covering this topic for 20 years, writing software, doing original research. There's content in the book that I think is broader than what you'll, find in many other books. The book itself is, you can go to my website at goldennumber.net and find a link to it there. If you like to buy from Amazon, you can just go to goldennumber.net/Amazon and it'll take you right to the page on Amazon if you'd like to purchase it. But like I say, it's a beautiful book, about 9.5 by 11.5, 3 pounds. And it's just the publisher Quarto Race Point did a beautiful job on it.
Well, Gary, I want to thank you so much for being here today. I know we've taken up a lot of your time. Is there any other projects besides the golden ratio that you're working on?
Well, there's some other related projects that I have kind of in the future. I'd like to, you know, do more of a practical application design, like tutorial, educational type book. I have a lot of information, even in the book, just some examples, but I'd like to kind of do something that would give people a deeper dive on that. Some of the research I've done on art and architecture, I'd love to have a book that just did a deeper dive on that. So those are other projects. And, you know, I, like I said, I have the software Phi Matrix that, you know, want to continue to develop and add features to make it better yet for users.
Oh, well, again, thank you so much. And I'm going to let our audience know the book is The Golden Ratio, The Divine Beauty of Mathematics by Gary Meisner, published by RacePoint in 2018. And this has been Tricia Keffer from sunny Key Largo, Florida, your host for New Books in Architecture, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. If you have any ideas for books, please drop me an email at plantspeoplelove@gmail.com. And thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Tricia. It was really a pleasure and a lot of fun to talk with you on this.